E equals MC squared. Yes, Einstein said it, and the transfiguration, well, it's a 2,000-year-old proof of it. Coming up, this is Father Voskin. I'm a priest of the Armenian Church, connecting the dots between the physical, emotional, psychological, and everything in between. This is episode number 582 of The Next Step. We're inviting you to take it with us right now.
Hi, this is Susie with In His Shoes Ministries, welcoming you to our 12th year of broadcasting, The Next Step with Father Voskin. Since 2008, we have been producing these podcasts on a weekly basis for those who are seeking practical and deeper applications of their faith and spirituality in their lives today. Blending the most ancient traditions of Armenian Orthodoxy with the challenges of the 21st century, Father Voskin brings a distinctive and unique voice to the Christian conversation of peace, harmony, and love. Armadoxy is a practical approach to melding spirit and passion in the real world. So turn up the volume and get ready to take the next step.
During the celebration of each and every divine liturgy of the Armenian Church, the priest makes a proclamation, which most of the time is not understood. And even if it is understood, it kind of goes by fairly quickly and doesn't give people a chance to sit in awe of what he said. Խաղաղությամբ կով Քրիստոս փրկիչ մեր, որ ի վեր է կանզամեն այն միտս և զբանս. With your peace, Christ our Savior, which surpasses, it's above all understanding and the words that we have to express, whatever we can express in this world. It's above expression. That peace is, well, as I said, it leaves us, should leave us in awe. That word awful, awesome, literally means to be in awe. You can't find the words. The peace of Christ, God, is something that leaves you in awe. In fact, that word awesome translates exactly into Armenian. It's ahavor, full of awe. Oh, it's exactly like the letter O, right? It's round, so you say oh. Awe. This is in awe. It leaves us in awe. There aren't words to describe the peace that our Lord Jesus Christ brings into our lives. There aren't words. It's above understanding what God is, as I've said many times. If you can define it, it's no longer God. It's beyond definition. Yes, and of course we try to give it some definition. We understand with concepts that we've come up with. Father, Son, Holy Spirit, Jesus Christ taking form, God becoming man, so that we have an opportunity to see that divine nature. But I want to take that a bit farther, because a few things happened which in the last few days, and all of them sort of like piggybacked on one another. And they came to a culmination last Sunday when I was sitting at the Divine Liturgy of the Armenian Church. Last Sunday was the Feast of Transfiguration, grossly expressed as Vartavar, but in true sense it literally means the transfiguration of Lord Jesus Christ. And I'll talk a little bit more about why I said grossly when we say about Vartavar, and I'll give you a hint. It's like kind of like, okay, so we're going to splash each other with water. And where's the awe in that? Let me take you to a point of awe. Something that happened, and I need to share this with you because it's beyond words, it's beyond understanding. So I'm sitting there at the Divine Liturgy of the Armenian Church. 3 days earlier, I had gotten off of a plane from Armenia, and during that long commute from Armenia, I was reading a book that my son had given me. It's by Neil deGrasse Tyson. I'm sure you've heard of him. He makes astrophysics sort of fun. I mean, I'm glad I'm reading it because I've seen his videos. I've seen him. He's kind of like cocky and arrogant and kind of like assumes that, you know, everybody else is stupid and he's got the answers. Well, you know. Does that kind of describe a lot of people, right? Okay. Anyway, the book was Astrophysics for People in a Hurry. And yes, we are in a hurry. And when you talk about astrophysics, you're talking about the beginnings of everything, right? You're talking about how this whole thing all began. And true to form, Tyson in this book begins with, well, the Big Bang. How everything just started. And I want to share with you, this is what I was reading on the plane. His chapter titles are very interesting. The first title is The Greatest Story Ever Told, where he talks about the beginning. The Greatest Story Ever Told. Those of you who may have missed that, that used to be a film that came out in the 60s based on a book. The Greatest Story Ever Told, of course, the story of the Bible, the story of Jesus Christ. The second chapter in Tyson's book, On Earth as It Is in Heaven. I've heard that, right? The Lord's Prayer, as earth as in heaven. Actually, he says, on earth as in the heavens. Okay. And the third chapter, Let There Be Light. Interesting, because it is actually a very well-written book and kind of like puts you in there and gives you an opportunity to check out, you know, things that you otherwise might have, not otherwise, definitely go unnoticed, right? Unless you've got this huge, huge telescope in your backyard, unless you're really into it. This is really stuff that bends your mind a little bit. And he starts off by talking about the first nanoseconds of the beginning of what we call the cosmos, what we call the universe. A trillionth of a second has passed when these forces of nature, when things are just colliding and things are just expanding. And within 2 seconds of the universe being formed, of the Big Bang, 2 seconds after the Big Bang, you've got already a cosmos that is as long as our solar system, as big as our solar system. You know, and he goes on and on. And these are mind-boggling. I mean, these numbers that he's talking about, beyond our understanding. I mean, can you really understand that in 2 seconds, the entire universe is the size of our solar system? And I'm not here to debate that. Obviously, there's research done. There's mathematics more than the research, more than anyone looking up into a telescope. It's the mathematics which defines it. And I have total respect for that. For that mathematics, because it is really a truly pure language that is spoken. It can define it. But we're asked to accept all of this. And it's being proposed as a theory of how things got to be the way they are. But his chapter titles are interesting because he's putting it, not us, he's putting it in the realm of religion by talking about the greatest story ever told as earth, on earth as in the heavens, and let there be light. Well, that's terminology reserved for the church, but definitely I'm so excited that he's pushing the boundaries and basically becomes an invitation for us to come in. Now, let's put a pause on that because something happened on last Sunday. Before there, I want to go back. You know, one of the big questions I get asked a lot of times is, what brought you into the church? What made you decide to become a priest? And as much as the religious factors were there, there was something that was very important in my life. And that was a discussion that I had with my father. I'd say probably about 12, 13 years old. 1960s. And he was telling me about the universal field theory. And he was telling me, because at that time he had read an article. He was a big subscriber to Scientific American. And I used to always just love looking through those magazines because it was just fascinating. Especially one of the parts that I really liked was the mathematical quizzes that they had with, I think it was Martin Gardner. And, I mean, very fascinating. And so he had read about the unified field theory. Now, what is that unified field theory? Basically, it's in physics that there is a theory that can put together, that could bring together all of the different forces in the universe. And this is something that actually, I believe Albert Einstein had quoted, an attempt to unite the general theory of relativity with electromagnetism. In other words, in the world, in the universe, there's electromagnetism, there's planetary movements, there's gravity, there's all these things. But is there one theory that brings it all together? And as much as anything else had played a role in my wanting to become a priest, or my interest in God, in faith, in understanding, was this truly open invitation to go beyond the normal boundaries and find, is there a unified field theory? It just excited me. A theory that could explain everything. And I never really thought about it until this past Sunday, that when I come on for the last 12 years and throughout my entire life, throughout my ministry, the things that I've been talking about, what's the one theme that I keep talking about? Connecting the dots, that we're all interconnected, that everything is interconnected. Connecting the dots is what? Finding a unified field theory. In other words, connecting the dots between everything. And I've always felt that that was, for me, it was the expression of God. And I understand that's not accepted by everybody, but for me, I think it makes sense. And that's why you listen to me, because I'm sharing with you something that clicks with you as well, right? And when you look at the entire cosmos, you look at the universe, and you look at all the different factors, and the physics that's behind all the gravity and the poles, and the mathematics that defines it, that expresses it, that kind of explains it, that explains all of it, right? You see that there's a beauty in it. And I find that same beauty in the expression of God. And it's interesting because something happened this Sunday on the Feast of Transfiguration that brought it all together for me. And that's what I want to share with you. So get ready, okay? Are you ready? Yeah, get some Kleenex, get some handkerchief if you need it, because this is going to be drooling. Yes, hashtag drool. It's mind-boggling when you think about it, okay? It's in the context of reading this Tyson book, Astrophysics for People in a Hurry. It's in the context of reading the scriptures and listening to what was taking place on the Transfiguration that I offer this. So I'm sitting in church, divine liturgy is taking place, and we get to the lectionary, to the readings of the day. And first we begin with the reading which comes to us from the letter of St. John. Now, this is in his first letter. Just listen to the wording, okay? This is what we proclaim to you, what was from the beginning, what we have heard, what we have seen with our eyes, what we have looked at and our hands have touched concerning the word of life. And the life was revealed, and we have seen and testify and announced to you the eternal life that is with the Father and was revealed to us. What we have seen and heard, we announce to you too, so that you may have fellowship with us. And indeed, our fellowship is with the Father and with his Son, Jesus Christ. Thus, we are writing these things so that our joy may be complete. Nice, right? John the Evangelist, he's telling people in a letter that, hey, I want to share this incredible message with you. So what is that message? Listen up. Now this is the gospel message that we have heard from him and announced to you, Are you ready? God is light. And in him there is no darkness at all. If we say we have fellowship with him, and yet keep on walking in the darkness, we are lying and not practicing the truth. But if we walk in the light, as he himself is in the light, we have fellowship with one another in the blood of Jesus his Son, cleansing us from all sin. Did you get that? God is light. Now, where have we heard this? Well, we haven't heard that exactly, but what does Tyson say in 2019? Namely, this year. This is written in 2018. He makes some points, which we all know. But it's beautifully said because he brings it to light. He puts it together in this book. And he talks about the importance of light speed. And what does he say here? He says, among all constants, the speed of light is the most famous. No matter how fast you go, you will never overtake a beam of light. Why not? No experiment ever conducted has ever revealed an object of any form reaching the speed of light. This is the one constant. You cannot go over the speed limit that light presents. You cannot go faster than the speed of light. You got it? Your peace is something that we cannot understand. We cannot reach. The speed of light is something that we cannot reach. The speed of light. And what does John the Evangelist say? 2,000 years ago, God is light. What does this mean? You know he's not talking about God as the sun. You know he's not talking about the sun as the expression of light. Now, this is beyond that. It's just like what we read in Genesis, right? God says, let there be light, as the first order of business. In fact, Tyson points to it in his book, right? Let there be light. Well, In Genesis, you realize that he's not talking about the sun, because according to that account, if you want to believe it as a literal translation, according to that account, right, the sun doesn't get created until the third day. So light is something else, not defined by these physical objects that give us the light. So here it is on Transfiguration Sunday. And I'm understanding this message as I heard the reader read. He says, God is light. And now the gospel message is going to be read. And so we stand up, as is our custom inside the church, and we're now ready to hear the gospel message coming to us from Matthew chapter 17. It says, 6 days later, Jesus took with him Peter, James, and John, the brother of James, and led them privately up a high mountain. And he was transfigured. His face shone like the sun, and his clothes became white as light. Then Moses and Elijah also appeared before them, talking with him. Jesus is now giving us a small glimmer. We're giving, as human beings, we are seeing this Christ light shining. We are seeing the beginning of let there be light, right? That is beyond our understanding. In fact, it is so beyond our understanding that it says Moses and Elijah also appeared with them, talking with him. So Peter said to him, Lord, it is good that we are here. If you want, I will make three shelters, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah. And while he was still speaking, a bright cloud overshadowed them, and a voice from the cloud said, this is my dear beloved son, in whom I take great delight. Listen to him. When the disciples heard this, they were overwhelmed with fear and threw themselves down with their faces on the ground. But Jesus came and touched them, and he said, get up. Do not be afraid. When they looked up, all they saw was Jesus alone. that expression, that light. God, beyond our understanding, beyond the words that we can do. In fact, Peter proves it. I mean, Peter does what we all do. He looks at it. He's seeing the ultimate light. He's seeing that God light. He's seen from the beginning of creation. He's seeing that light radiating. Jesus Christ, and what does he do? Let me make you a tent. You remember a few minutes ago I said that we have these very vulgar expressions in Vartabar. The Christ light is shining, transfiguration. And sadly, in many of the Armenian churches, they're talking about, hey, come for the water festival. Hey, if you want a water festival, go to Disneyland and they'll spray you with some water. Go to Magic Mountain. They have these great, great rides that go through the water and you get wet. And we've now brought down transfiguration to something that is very feeble. It's something that everybody likes. Hey, I'm not, on a hot day, I would love to get soaked by water. In fact, I went to church and I was kind of sad that nobody did soak me with water. I had one gentleman who walked up to me. I was walking with my friend Sako back to the car and the guy comes up with a pail of water and he goes, Father, should I do this to you? And I go, oh, no. And I guess the real thing should have been, yeah, please do it. But you don't ask. Just go ahead and drench, you know? I'm all for it. Have fun. But you can't overshadow what's going on. You've got the bright Christ light. You've got the transfiguration. And that transfiguration is the connection that John was talking about. You see, today we talk about, and this is back in the early 20th century when Einstein came up with the theory of relativity. What did he say? What is that expression that we all know, but few people can understand, right? E equals mc squared. Break it up. Energy equals mass times the speed of light, which we said is the highest, squared. In other words, times itself. So it's not necessary to go through the mathematics on that. All you need to know is that there is this huge number. So if you can accelerate, if you can get that up to a point, we see that energy and mass are interchangeable. And the constant there is the speed of light squared, this horrendously big number. Well, what are we saying? Jesus Christ, God taking form, light taking form, energy and mass, interchangeable, light taking form, God, the light taking human form, the mass, Jesus Christ. And we're accelerating that at some constant, at some huge number. And we're seeing that it's all interchangeable. It all connects. It's the dots that are connecting for us. And we have that expression. We have that expression in the Armenian church. Ivere kanzam enai midasi abizvanas. St. John said it 2,000 years ago. It was repeated throughout the centuries in our liturgy. At the beginning of the 20th century, Einstein articulated it, E equals mc squared. And today, Steve, people are still pondering it. And now we're seeing that it's all connected. It's the ultimate connection of the dots. Now, how does this define electromagnetism, just the gravitational poles and everything, the unified field theory? Well, think about it for a moment. We are given an opportunity in the transfiguration, to peer at, to glance at, to see the beginning of all time. That's the light that Jesus is radiating. That moment of singularity that Tyson talks about, that millions have talked about in physics. The Big Bang, and what happens? How does that all begin? God is light. It begins because someone said, let it begin. I'm going to take a break right now, okay? Are you drooling yet? I hope so. If you are, hashtag me drool, okay? Here is my friend Gor Mkhitaryan doing a song about light, appropriately for today.
Որ կարող ես բոլորին տրվել Ամահական անհատույցեր սայս բաժանել Գույն առանց քեզ հավատ չունի գույների հանդեպ Գույն առանց քեզ իմաստ չունի գույր հավատի պես Ճամը բաներ քեզ մոտ Քոն է արքայությունը ամեն Դու շատ ծերես, բայց մաքուր ես Ադամանդի պես Ծեր արևի լուրծի ծաղնես Որ շոյում ես մեզ Գիշերներին բացակայես, բայց չես մոռանում ես Լուսնի տեսքով, աստղի ձևով, ողջում ես մեզ
Mkhitaryan doing Luisi Masin about light. That is off of the Spirit album. Actually, that song first appeared on Godfather Tom Music of the Armenian Underground. Yeah, one of the. It's a cool album by Gor Mkhitaryan. I'll have links on today's show notes to all of his music, but I particularly like this version. This is off of the Spirit album. The original version comes in with a lot of. A banjo on it too, which is unique. It's a beautiful sound, and all of his music is very unique. I tend to appreciate Gor Mkhitaryan more the more I get to hear different Armenian genres and music. I really, really appreciate Gor's music because it is truly novel. It is a welcome new expression of Armenian music that sometimes, unfortunately, you miss if you're not tuned to it. And just like the Transfiguration story I was telling you about, right? There's this awesome event taking place, and instead they're consumed by, hey, let's make you some tents, you know, or like there's the Transfiguration, hey, let's have, let's see who could drench the other person with water, and we'll celebrate some pagan feast from 2,000-3,000 years ago. Okay, that's great, you know, nice. Fun, but did you miss the point? And the same thing, I think a lot of times we're not tuned to just some great, great stuff that's going on all around us, one of which is Gor Mkhitaryan and his music. Always a pleasure to hear his song. This one about light and the expressions that he talks about in there. He talks about like the light being there to express, like what is color without that light? And coming on and you know, put it in the context of what we were talking about today, about God being light, about what the evangelist says. I mean, you've got this incredible theology growing and mushrooming, just as big as the Big Bang, right? And, you know, don't take that lightly. I'm not just throwing that out. I really mean it. I mean it, that these expressions, for us to be able to use our mind, for us to connect dots, for us to wonder, for us to express ourselves, to me, that's God living within us. That's what it means to be created in the image of God, to be creative, to be able to find these dots, bring them together, and bring a fuller understanding of your life within the context of those cosmos, within the context of that universe. Gor Mkhitaryan, About the Light, Luis Simasin, off of the Spirit album. There'll be a link on today's show notes. Okay, it's been pretty heavy duty so far, okay? Let's go into some other places. Got an interesting conversation the other day with a follower named Setrag, who happens to live here in the Los Angeles area. He was mentioning about the closed box church idea that we were talking about last week, about the idea that there's all this beauty all around us, and we create these little churches where we define our faith and our religion. And in particular, I was sharing with you the idea that we were walking on the fields of Sasnashen in the village, and there was Mount Ararat, and the most beautiful, beautiful area that you could imagine in all of the world. And the need for a community to make a small little box church in which they would put a cross and a picture of Jesus and other religious artifacts. And that's where you would go to worship. But really all around you is this worship. And he made this really good point, because here in the Los Angeles area, particularly in Glendale, they're spending millions and millions of dollars to create an Armenian museum. And it actually followed very nicely. It's the similarities are remarkable. Because while they're creating a museum to remember the past and to honor the past, and in particular, of course, you know it has to be about the genocide. By the way, did you hear the latest that Bernie Sanders has promised, has vowed to recognize the Armenian genocide? And Armenians are excited. Yes. That's right. We're going to talk about that applause in a few minutes too, okay? So hang on. But they're building this giant, giant museum to honor the past. Meanwhile, what are we saying about our people today? And it's the same story as the closed box church. You know, you're looking at that closed box was where we find God, and people are going to define this museum as a place where we can learn Armenian history, when all around you there's a culture that's maturing, that is expanding, that is expressive with its difficulties. And where is our money being placed to reach out to the youth, to reach out to some of the social domestic problems that we're experiencing as a bunch of immigrants coming into a foreign land? These are not expressed. So I appreciate that conversation with Setrag, and it's an interesting one because it follows right along the lines of the closed box church, which was the theme of last week's podcast. So with that being said, I'm going to share with you something that I've shared with you many times, but it came out. You know, it's always nice when somebody could validate your craziness, right? It means that, okay, there's a couple of us in the world. Well, one of my pet peeves, and I've shared this with you in the past, has been this canned laughter, canned applause that is, it kind of defines many of the sitcoms, many of the entertainment that we have, whether it's on television, it's on the internet. Like, what is funny? Like, have you ever watched a show like Ellen DeGeneres? Have you ever watched the talk shows, or Jerry Springer, even on a little bit more the vulgar side? Have you ever watched Dr. Oz or Dr. Phil? And what do you hear when they announce the star of the show, or you know, where the late night talk shows, okay? When they announce the star, listen to the people. their applause. It's not just applause. It's like yelling. Yeah! Yeah! People are yelling. Now, sometimes they scan the audience, and if you look out, you don't see people yelling. You see people applauding. They stand up. But you don't see this kind of like, yeah, what you would hear. Which kind of lets you believe, or it should make you believe, and wonder, like, are they adding something to the applause? I think they are. They are adding, of course. In fact, many of the, before, like, reality TV became popular, a lot of the sitcoms had added laugh tracks. It wasn't, I think it was like mid-70s. I think maybe All in the Family was one of the first that came out and said it is recorded before a live studio audience. It was important that, in other words, we don't have a laugh track to tell you when to laugh, but you're going to hear the audience reacting to the actors, and that might stimulate you to laugh. In other words, it was pretty daring. And then some shows had a live studio audience. I believe Cheers was like that too, where you had the audience reacting to the actors, to the jokes that were made. But that doesn't preclude that they were using the laugh track as well. Well, why is it a pet peeve with me? It's because if you listen to some of the things that they say, they're not funny. And without the laugh track, you wouldn't think it was funny. And if you don't believe me, I challenge you to just watch a talk show. Watch something that's taking place and just imagine it without the laugh track. Would you laugh at the joke? This is from last night's Stephen Colbert, okay? Listen to it, okay? It is funny. Is it, challenge yourself. Is it funny to the degree that people are yelling and hollering and, well, listen.
Welcome one and all in here, out there, to The Late Show. I'm your host, Stephen Colbert. We are coming to you live. Coming to you live after tonight's Democratic debate. Tonight we saw a clash of the big bees. Biden, Bernie, Buttigieg, Bick and Blooper. Coming into the evening, Joe Biden had a big lead in all the polls, and to celebrate, his supporters handed out free ice cream they called Joe Cones. A Joe Cone is also what Biden wears to make sure he respects personal space these days. Just safety. It's a response. It's a response. But tonight, the Joe Cone was met by the Kamala Harris flamethrower. She... Oh, you watched it. Yes. He had the Joe Cone, but she made Joe scream, you scream, we all scream. Holy cow, she might be president. As... There you go.
Okay, it's funny. There are some funny parts. Is it to the degree that you're just yelling and screaming and laughing out loud? Well, like I said, it's always important to validate what you're saying by having some corroboration, having somebody say that, okay, I feel it too. And I was very surprised a couple days ago on NPR, they talked about my pet peeve. And I'll tell you why this fits in with what we talk about, why it's a next step issue. But first, listen, this is off of NPR a couple days ago, and to everything that I have, I will have show notes that direct you to the longer versions, what you could see and what you can. But here is the small little show that they presented a few days ago on NPR radio.
Laugh tracks. Maybe you love them, maybe you hate them. You know, this is the canned, recorded laughter that you hear on some sitcoms. Well, a new study confirms that adding extra laughs works. It can actually make jokes seem funnier. NPR's Nell Greenfield Boyce investigates.
Okay, here's a joke. What's the best day to cook? Friday. Get it? Friday? This is one of 40 jokes used in a recent scientific study.
They are terrible jokes. They are really bad jokes.
Sophie Scott is a researcher at University College London. Over Skype, she told me the jokes had to be bad.
We wanted it to be possible for them to be made funnier, Because if we went into this kind of study with absolutely fantastic jokes, there's the danger that they couldn't be improved upon.
She and her colleagues wanted to see if the jokes could be improved by adding laughter. The researchers had a bunch of people listen to the jokes and rate how funny they were. Then they had other people listen to the same jokes. Only now, the jokes were followed by laughter, like this.
Who is the best kung fu vegetable? Brock Lee.
The results in the journal Current Biology show that jokes consistently got higher ratings when they were paired with laughter.
Having any laughter there at all makes the jokes seem funnier, and people are sensitive to the laughs themselves. So the more intense the laughs, the funnier it seems to make the joke.
They know this because they tested the effect of both forced laughter and spontaneous giggles. Interestingly, all of this held true for study participants who had autism, even though people with autism can have difficulty with social cues and connections. That's the part of the study that intrigued Robert Provine. He's a researcher with the University of Maryland, Baltimore County, who studied laughter.
The novelty of it is not just that we rate material as funnier and are more likely to laugh in response to it if we hear other people laughing. But this is also true of autistic individuals.
Provine says laughter is an ancient signal of playfulness that's contagious.
In fact, you can throw away the joke.
He says all you need to produce laughter is laughter. Nell Greenfield Boyce, NPR News.
Yeah, all you need to produce laughter is more laughter. Did you hear it earlier in the Colbert piece?
Buttigieg. Bickin blooper. Coming in.
Okay, there you go. It's about encouragement. You're encouraged to laugh. You're encouraged to smile. That's okay, right? Of course it is. And so laugh tracks have been placed on shows for years. It cues you to when you should applaud, when you should laugh. And what does that mean? Why is this an issue for me here on The Next Step? Why do we talk? Because what we're being told and conditioned is what to accept as funny, as humorous, and as acceptable. You see, everybody's engaged in that process of giving you information and getting you to believe it. Sometimes we forget how powerful a tool television and media is. Yes, we refrain from it. We talk very bad. Just like this week, they just came out with the statistics on the best fast food places. Do you know what was the number one? This for the first time beating out hamburgers, especially the hamburger chain In-N-Out. This year, the one that beat out all of them was Chick-fil-A. It's a chicken place, right? Now, that information is good, but here's the one that caught my attention. In the same survey, they found that McDonald's ranked pretty low as far as customer satisfaction goes, but it still retained its top spot as selling the most food. It is the largest chain of fast food. So what is this telling us? That, you know, when push comes to shove, people are going and they're buying over there. But when it comes to a microphone in their face, when it comes to people in surveys, they're saying, well, it's okay to knock down the heavyweight champ. McDonald's, it's okay to knock them down. They're big enough. They can handle it. And I want to go with the flow. I want to go with everyone else and say that, oh, yeah, horrible McDonald's. But you know what? Well, no one's watching. That's where I'm going to eat. Well, this is kind of one of those things that we find throughout not only just the fast food industry, but of course in politics and of course in religion. People want to go with the big ones. They want to go where they're going to feel welcome. But in front of people, and I find this a lot very true in the Armenian church, because it is the largest institution. It's the one that attracts the most attention. And of course, the most attention means the most open to criticism. Think about it as pure physics too, right? The largest surface area. You start throwing rocks, what are you likely to hit? You're going to hit the one that has the largest surface area among your many targets. Well, it's the same thing. The church, it's the biggest one. But people want to go with the popularity. So people hear, and they're popular, the votes that they talk about, what they're going to be voting for, they want to go popular. That's why a lot of the polls, if you haven't heard of the Bradley effect, it's a true effect that took place during the Bradley Dukmejian election. In front of people, people say one thing, but when it comes to the privacy of the election booth, they do another thing. And it's the same thing when it comes to the church, when it comes to being part of a group of people. You will go with the group rather than express your own beliefs, your wants, and your own preferences, right? And it's so true. We see this all over the place. People will always go with the flow rather than go against the flow. And this is what concerns me about when you're letting somebody else tell you this is where you will laugh, this is where you will applaud, this is what you will like. If religion did that, people would be up in arms about it. And in many senses, religion does do that, right? And people get up in arms. They get all excited. Yet when a huge multi-billion dollar industry, such as the entertainment industry, comes out and puts laugh tracks, applause tracks, we're quiet about it. Not because we approve of it, but because we don't know about it. It hasn't been exposed yet. And that's why I really appreciated this small little NPR piece. It kind of validated what I've been saying. You know, some of these things that people are being fed are not funny. And yet we're told to laugh at this point. Some of these things are truly issues of concern. And instead, we're wiping it away with a laughter here or there. For me, it's the laughter that's associated with sex, right? So they'll talk about, oh, we're going to have sex with this person and do that. And then there's a laugh track put in there. And there's no mention that the product of that sex might be children. Watching a show the other day, and the guy, I believe it was on Seinfeld, it was obviously, it was an old episode, and he's talking about his sperm count and how excited he is that he was able to impregnate somebody. Okay, and people are laughing, and we're told to laugh at this point, at that point, by these laugh tracks, but nobody ever talks about what is the consequence, namely a child being born, a child that is just basically going to be out there, right? Without anybody claiming responsibility because there was a funny matter. There was an issue of our laughter at his low sperm count and now overcoming that sperm count. And you know as well as I do because of our Puritan ancestry, our ways, these things have become funny so that when you need a laugh, you always bring in the bathroom joke. You always bring in the sexual joke. And you are told that it is worthy of laughter by the soundtrack. Take a minute. Challenge yourself. Listen to people. Don't be so quick to laugh. If you want to laugh, laugh. I know there is a lot of funny things in the world. But for the most part, we're being told what is funny. Instead of just really allowing ourselves to listen, what is being said? Challenging ourselves to what are the consequences of these jokes and what we're talking about. For instance, to me, the situation here in America is dismal. We have a president who has just basically brought it down to the bottom line of tweeting some very, very tough, big concepts, coming out with a 200, what is the limit now, 250, whatever the number of characters on Twitter are. So basically in the 250 characters, he's able to articulate something like war, something as nuclear annihilation. Our deepest prejudices are coming out. I mean, it's remarkable. And this needs to be confronted. And instead, it's becoming topics of jokes. And so late night comedians will take the politics and people will laugh. And meanwhile, what's happening to society? What's happening to our world? Are we really comfortable with just laughing about it? Are we really challenging ourselves to say, this isn't right, and we need to do something about it? That, of course, is an issue for another day. And I won't get into the politics today. I just wanted to alert you that your Father Voskin isn't crazy at all. There is an NPR, small little, 2.5 minute, albeit, podcast that kind of validates that, yes, we are being told what to laugh at, what to applaud at. We'll take a break right now, and no laughter, no applaud. We'll just have Susie tell us what we should be liking.
Susie here again. Before continuing with today's broadcast, I'd like to take this opportunity to remind you that this podcast is made possible through your prayers and generous donations. Since 2008, we have been providing quality programming through podcasts, educational videos, and streams, using technology's most current resources. The message of Armenian Orthodoxy is giving people an intelligent and practical answer to many of life's difficulties, including the challenge to bring peace to a hurting world. To become part of this dynamic ministry, please take a moment now to visit inhisshoes.org website and press on the donate button. Your encouragement goes a long way. Please accept our heartfelt appreciation. Thanks for listening, and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Voskin.
Thank you, Susie, for that announcement. And thank you to our listeners for all your love, your support, your kind words. We are reaching out in places that we never thought would be possible, but it's all thanks to God's grace and the love and kindness that you have shared with us. So thank you very much for being a partner in this ministry. And if you do want to get more involved and aren't a partner yet, you can do so by going to the mothership inhisshoes.org and pressing on the donate button. And your donation goes to move this ministry forward. Got a lot of things coming up in the next few months, including a big trip and a pilgrimage to Armenia. If you're interested in that, as well as any of our projects, do drop us a line. In Armenia, we're going to be opening the Sasnashen Center. We spoke about it last week. I'll put a link on today's show notes so you could check out that, as well as the blog that I wrote about Sasnashen. Specifically, there is an opportunity for us to expand with ministry over there, and we're looking for somebody who's really going to be able to substantially help us out financially to get us out there, and to the tune of between $10,000 to $15,000 for a 1 year commitment out there in Sasnashen. This is in the northern area of Armenia. So I throw it out there. You never know. God has a way of connecting dots better than we can ever even imagine, right? Well, of course, you know that, right? Well, listen, we are at the end of today's show, and I want to thank you for joining us. I hope you enjoyed today's show as much as we enjoyed producing it for you. Got some exciting things coming up along with the Armenia trip. This weekend, we've got an event for the Halo Project. Want to do a big shout-out to Seza. Wish her all the best, as well as a shout-out to all of you on the East Coast. Thank you so much. This week, I was like almost bombarded, but I appreciate it with all of the feeds and everything that you sent me with the new priest that was ordained, Father Voski. Want to wish him the best. God's blessings and strength as he begins this new ministry. May it be a fruitful ministry and always bringing praise to God. We also want to do a big shout out to our dear friend Bishop Daniel as he continues and expands on this ministry that he's been ordained to in the Eastern Diocese as the newly consecrated bishop. Just so excited. And thank you again to all of our listeners for sending us all that great material. Please, please keep it up. You can find us on all the socials as well as at the mothership inhisshoes.org. On behalf of the wonderful crew who put today's show together, on behalf of Susie, our producer, Ken, our technical director, this is Father Voskin, inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
And now here's the fine print.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskullness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of vpostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
You're seeing the same sky as we are.